Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. A very warm welcome into Tech Talk, your weekly journey into the world of technology from a blindness and partially sighted perspective. It's the community's opportunity to get our voices heard and to share information, and we would love to hear from you. So do drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk with your emails, voice notes, and anything else that you would like to share with us here at Tech Talk. Coming up this week, we'll be speaking with audio producer and audio expert Matt Brown from Living Audio about some of the technology he uses in his recording studio to make life a little bit more accessible for him as a blind audio producer. And we'll also be getting to grips with the new indoor navigation features recently added to Microsoft's Seeing AI. So that's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts, as ever, Tasneem Arshad, Callum Stoneman. Welcome back, guys. How are you?
Yes, good. Thank you.
Doing good, thanks.
Good, good. What's on your radar this week, Tasneem?
Well, actually, I've recently discovered something with JAWS, which is accessible, which I quite like. So somewhere up in the ribbon in Outlook, you can actually attach an email to another email. So I'm kind of finding that an interesting feature. It's not something I've really used before, but I've used it a couple of times recently, and I quite like the fact that instead of just forwarding an email where the person just reads the email below, you can actually put it as an attachment. So I think that's pretty cool.
How about you, Callum Stoneman? What's grabbing your attention in the world of technology at the moment?
I've just been reading some news about some updates to the Blindshell Classic 2. I wouldn't describe it as a feature phone. It's like your old school classic push-button phone, but it's becoming increasingly more of a smartphone, and they've recently added Zoom on there, the web conferencing platform. So
that's really impressive.
It is pretty cool.
Okie doke. Well, welcome in to Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman. It's Tech Talk.
Regular Tech Talk listeners will know that I am a huge fan of Microsoft Seeing AI. This is the free iOS app that uses your iPhone's camera or your iPad's camera to provide all sorts of features, really. It can recognize text, either short bits of text, or you can scan full documents with it. It can recognize handwritten text. It can recognize products via barcodes, detect colors, tell you how much light is in your environment. It's kind of the app that does everything, really, is how I describe it, or it seems to do everything. And one of the features that's been added to that ever-growing list recently is indoor navigation. Now, indoor navigation is always a challenge because you can't use the more traditional things that you'd use for outdoor navigation. So all the apps that we use, you know, Blind Square, Good Maps, Soundscape, before that, of course, got discontinued, they're all using GPS to provide navigation information, but you can't do that indoors. So there's been a big challenge there for a number of years. And there's been some really good solutions for this. You know, NaviLens have got their way of doing this. There are other solutions out there that you make use of Bluetooth low energy beacons. But the biggest obstacle really with them, pun intended, is that they require the developer or the owner of the building to invest in that hardware and to have that hardware installed, to have it configured, or in the case of NaviLens, you know, they've got to have the NaviLens codes available and they've got to have them in the right place and where the camera can see them. It's another step for society, really, to do, which, as we know, can be difficult. So the way Microsoft have tried to get around this, or the way Microsoft have tried to do this, is by using the device's camera. So this will work on any iPhone running iOS 14 or newer. So as long as your phone runs iOS 14, doesn't have to be LiDAR. We will come on to LiDAR in a minute because it is an advantage, but you don't have to use it. So if you've got a device that doesn't have LiDAR, that's not a problem. You can still use this. As long as your phone runs iOS 14 or newer, you will have access to this. And all you do is just walk around with your foot, so walk the route that you want to record with your phone's camera held out in front of you so it can get a good look at your environment and get a good look at your surroundings and where you're going. And it will then set waypoints as you go. It will set its own little markers. You select, obviously, your start point and destination point. And then in future, you can go back in and follow that route and it will direct you on the route, on the way that you recorded. So we'll talk a bit more about this and share our thoughts on it in a minute. But I thought what I'd do first is just have a quick test of this and give a demo of it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch over to the iPhone. I'm going to record the iPhone and we're just going to do a really simple route around my house. So we're just going to do from my office upstairs where I'm recording this, downstairs to the kitchen, which is kind of the closest we can get really from to going, you know, from one end of the house to the other really. And it's not a very long route, it's not very complicated, but it should give us an idea of how this works and how well it performs.
Okay, so I'm on the iPhone now, Scene AI is running. And because I've only just opened the app, we're on the short text channel by default. So I'm just going to go up to the bottom of the screen where you select your channels, and I'm going to flick up until we hear the world channel. That's the one that we're
channel
for.
Short text, document, product, person, currency, scene, color, handwrite, light, world, preview.
There it is. There's the world channel. And if you're on a device that doesn't have LiDAR, this channel won't have been available to you until now, until this update. And the only option you'll have on here is the option for indoor navigation. I'm on a device that does have LiDAR. This is a 13 Pro, so I've got a few other options on this screen, but we don't really need to worry about them at this stage. I'm just going to flick to the left until we hear actions. And then in there is where the indoor navigation is on a LiDAR device.
So. Actions. Button. Seeing AI. Actions. Spatial summary. Play speaking. Indoor navigation. Button. Close. Button.
Now, on this screen, well, when you first go onto this, it will give you a tutorial of what indoor navigation is and how it works and how you use it. But this screen is where your routes would appear. So any routes that you've saved or that people have sent you and you've imported in, they'll appear on here. We're going to create a new route because there's no routes on this screen yet. So we'll flick to the right until we hit add.
Routes, quick help, add button.
Double tap. And now it's going to tell us how to capture the
cancel button
starting point of the route. So let's have a listen.
Create start. Before walking the route, it's important to capture the area around the starting point thoroughly so that someone following the route can easily find it. If possible, choose a starting point that has distinguishing characteristics. Avoid large blank surfaces, reflective materials, and repeating patterns. After tapping continue, show the camera around the area where the route starts. Scan all directions, including tilting slightly up and down. Imagine painting a sphere with yourself at the center.
Okay, so remember, because this is indoor navigation, it's not using GPS or any of your traditional navigation methods. This is essentially just looking around your environment to work out what's around you and to work out where you are. So I'm going to click continue, and what it's going to ask me to do is essentially walk on the spot but in a circle around the area that I'm stood and tilt the phone kind of in all different angles, really, up, down, left, right, you know, move the phone, basically try and get it so that the camera is capturing every possible angle, as many angles as possible of the starting point, so that it can recognize it best it can. So at the minute I'm stood in my office, I'm stood kind of with my desk to the left of me and I'm facing the door. So I'm going to click continue, and then it's going to talk me through creating that starting point, and it will tell us how far along we are as well, and it will do little clicks
continue button
to let us know that it's processing. So we'll double tap continue and see what we get.
Continue. Back button. Slowly turn in a circle. Tilt your phone up and down as you spin.
Okay, so I'll do that.
5% completed.
And we're getting those clicks to let us know that it's working. And I'm very slowly turning around.
25% completed.
And moving the phone in all different directions.
50% completed.
The phone is in portrait mode at this point, by the way, and I'm holding it, obviously, with the back camera facing
67%
out
completed
in front of me, and it's at kind of chest height, I would say.
Continue showing the camera your surroundings.
So it's just trying to get these
72% completed.
Maybe it's slightly dark in here, I'm not too sure. But again, that's a good test of it.
75% completed.
Because this does seem to be taking longer than last time to get these angles right.
80% completed. 90% completed. 90. Tilt the phone up and down as you show the camera every angle. 100%. Enter a descriptive name for the starting point of your route, such as lobby or my office.
There we go. We got there in the end. It didn't take anywhere near as long as that when I tested this, but there we go. It's early days. So now it's asking us to choose a name for this waypoint. And we've got a couple of text fields
name.
Here.
Text field. Text field. Is editing.
I'm just going to go in and
name.
Call this
insertion
office.
Point at start. Capo. At any text field. Is editing. Office. Character mode. Insertion point at end.
Okay. So we've got office in the name text field. And then if we flick to the right, this is really nice. You can also
add any additional notes to explain where this route begins, such as by the door or near the vending machines.
So you can add additional notes as well. So you can really describe a route in detail, or if someone else is creating a route for you, they can name the waypoint and also describe in detail as well. So in this case, I could put a note in saying, you know, make sure the desk is to your left, for example. But that's optional. We don't really need to do that. So we've
notes,
got
optional. Text, continue.
We can skip
button.
That and click continue.
Now walk to the destination and tap end route.
And it says, now walk to the destination and tap end route. So what I'm doing at this point is I'm stood in the same place that I was last time. The phone is held out in front of me in portrait mode, and I'm not tilting it or spinning around or messing about as I'm doing this. I'm just holding the phone. I'm just walking the route. Well, I'm going to start walking in a second. And I'm just holding the phone straight out in front of me at about chest height and with the back camera looking out. So I'll start walking now. I'm just heading out of the door of my office. We'll get these pings as we're going, and I'll explain those in a minute. And I'm going slightly to the right at the end of the landing, and I'm walking down the stairs now. 13 of these. Okay, I'm now at the bottom of the stairs, and I'm in my living room, so I'm going to turn right. And I'm now just walking past the couch. Turn to the right again slightly. And here's the door to my dining room, which is closed at the minute. So I'm going to open that door and walk through. Close that behind me as well, because, you know, why not? Straight on for a bit longer, and then slightly right into the kitchen. And then just here in front of me is that air fryer I was going on about a couple of weeks ago. That's on the side as you walk into our kitchen, so that's the route. I'll leave it there. So we'll go to end route.
Creating a new quick help. End route button. Enter a descriptive name for the route destination.
And now we're entering a name this time for the end point of the route for the destination.
Name. Text field. Insertion point at capo.
So I'll just call that kitchen. And it's the same interface.
Notes optional.
It's the same interface that we had for the start point. So we've got the notes field there as well. So I'm just going to click save.
Save button. Save. Saving your route.
And there we go. That tone indicates the route is
close
saved.
Button. Close button.
Now, you may have heard those pings as we were walking along. What they are is the waypoints. So we entered in the name for the start point, which was office, and the end point, which was kitchen, where we are now. But as we were walking along that route, Scene AI was kind of saving its own little waypoints that I don't really know how it does it, whether it's things that it thinks are significant or whether it's just after a certain amount of distance, but it's saving its own little waypoints where it will direct you to. So if you're familiar with the beacons in Soundscape, where you can go to a destination and it will play the beacon. For example, let's say the destination is towards your right, it will play the beacon in your right ear. And if the destination was on your left, it will play it in your left ear. Or if it was straight ahead of you, it would play it in both ears. It's doing that sort of thing for different points along the route. And we're going to go back upstairs now and redo this route. And this time, rather than creating it, we're going to let it direct us, essentially. And hopefully that will make more sense. So let's pause this recording, head back upstairs, and we'll see how it does that actually directing us on a route that we've now created. Now I'm back upstairs and back to where we started, back in the office. And this is where things are hopefully going to get interesting, because this is the bit that we all really want to know about. It's all well and good recording routes, but how well does it do at actually directing you on those routes? I'm just going to do a couple of things before we actually start navigating. Because I'm on a LiDAR device, if you're on a device without LiDAR, you don't have to worry about this. But I said there's some other options on the screen and we don't need to worry about them yet. Just to make life easier, because what it's going to do, as we're navigating, because I've got a LiDAR device, it's going to try and describe objects as we're walking, as well as the beacon that we're hearing to help us navigate. And it just gets a bit confusing at this stage. When you're in an unfamiliar environment, that might be really useful to hear that there's something ahead of you, or, you know, something in the way, or a person is coming towards you. But for this one, for home use, I think it's going to be a bit much in one go. So we'll just go in and turn those announcements off. So I'm just going to go into filters on this screen.
Channel, world, actions, filters, button. Seeing eye, done, live announcements. Announce objects, switch button, on, off.
So I'm just going to turn that off.
Live done, button.
And click done. And menu, hopefully,
button.
Hopefully that will stay off. But it seems to like turning itself back on, that option, but we'll see how we go. So we're now going to go into actions.
Channel, actions.
Into indoor navigation.
Cancel. Action, space, play speaking, indoor navigation, button.
And then close. On this screen, button. We should have the route that we created earlier, which has been called office route to kitchen.
Heading, quick, add, nearby, office to kitchen, button.
There it is, office to kitchen. The way that it names these routes is it goes by the name of the start point to the name of the end point. So, and as far as I can tell, there doesn't seem to be a way to rename these, or at least not yet. So at the minute, because we put office as the start point and kitchen as the end point, it's automatically called it office to kitchen. So that's something to bear in mind. Just make sure that when you're putting in your start and destination names, just make sure they make sense, because that's what your route is going to be called. And also, a little bit off topic, if you can hear some jingling in the background, my cat has been following me around as I'm doing this. I think she's very intrigued as to what I'm doing, because I've wandered around the house about 10 times testing this. So I think she's a bit intrigued. So we've got the route there, office to kitchen. If we double tap that, we'll get a couple of options.
Alert, follow, button.
Conveniently enough, the first one is follow. So we'll double tap that. And then...
looking for office.
It's looking for that environment that it made us get earlier. So I'm just holding the phone out in front of me at about chest height.
Just going to loading route.
There we go, it's found it. Now at this point, we can hear that tone kind of central, which basically means go straight ahead. And that beacon is going to follow you around. So if you're a Soundscape user, you'll be familiar with this. If I kind of move my phone to the right, it's playing that tone on the left because it's saying that I need to be to the left. And these tones are representing the little waypoints that it created earlier. So you want to make sure your phone is held as straight as possible. So I'm going to go back to it being straight. And this is correct, because if you remember, we walked straight forward out of the door for a while, for a few steps. Then it did a ping while we were on the landing, which was its first waypoint that it had set itself. So I'll walk forward onto the landing, and then we should hear a ping, and then we should hear a waypoint towards the right, because we went to the right when we got to the end of the landing. So I'll start walking forward. The beacon will drift around a bit, just as I move forward, but we'll see how we go. And there we go, it's saying it's playing it to the right now, so I'll go to the right when I can. When I get to the end of this landing, just pass in the two bedrooms and turn right. And you can hear it straight ahead now, which means I'm going the right way, which is correct. So I'll go straight forward down the steps. And again, Bella's following me. It's now done another ping and it's playing to the right, which is correct because we turned right when we got to the bottom of the stairs. So I'll turn to the right, I'll walk forward a bit, and there's straight ahead, which is correct, I'll walk forward, And now it's drifted to, there we go, it's drifted to the right, which is again correct. I'll turn to the right. Go through the door. And if I had object detection on, it would be saying door at this point. Square up to that beacon. No, yep, that's central, so I'll go straight ahead. And it's a bit early on that one, but it's saying there's one to the right, which is now. And then any second, it should, there we go, reached the destination. So
it's channel, world preview, adjustable.
And now it's just gone back to the main screen of the world channel. So it's certainly interesting. The directions were pretty battery. Accurate. Really accurate, in fact. It was changing its waypoint a bit early. It wasn't exactly, it's like, for example, when we needed to turn right, and I realised that route was mainly right turns. But when we needed to turn right, it wasn't quite bang on at the point where we had to turn right. So if you were in a big kind of open space, then I could see this getting confusing. But for a situation like that, obviously you wouldn't really use this in your house like I just did, unless it was maybe a new place, I guess. Could help you get familiar with it. But if it was an area where you've got something that you can do, because look, this isn't replacing a mobility aid. This isn't replacing your cane or your guide dog by any stretch. So if you've got something where you can use those other skills as well. So let's say, for example, like I think a hotel corridor would be perfect for this. You know, so if there wasn't any braille on the door of the rooms, then you could, you know, do one of these routes, and chances are it would get you to your room, I think. But you'd need that sort of guidance, because the turns and where the waypoint changes isn't exactly at the right point. So if you were in quite a big open space, you could quite easily make a wrong turn at the wrong time, which, as we know, can kind of throw you off. But for a first version of this, this is pretty impressive in my opinion.
Thanks very much to Callum Stoneman there for a really fantastic demonstration of the indoor navigation features recently added to Microsoft's Seeing AI. Callum is with us now, as is Tasneem Arshad, and joining us from our Technology for Life team, somebody else who's been playing with the new indoor navigation in Seeing AI is Colin Shales. Welcome to Tech Talk, Colin.
Hello, Dave. Hello, guys. Thank you for having me on.
That's quite all right. So I'm just going to come to you first, Callum. Is this something that you think you would be using in anger on a daily basis, or is it a little bit of a novelty at the moment?
I think it's early days. And I think as an initial test of it, I mean, that seems to go fairly well. But that was in a place that I'm familiar with, and that's the only chance that I've had time to actually try it out. So in a place that I'm not too familiar with, or in a place that's, as I said in the demo, they're quite big, quite open. I don't know if it's quite there yet, but it's the best one that I've seen out of all of these. So the best one that I've personally have had a chance to play with, I think.
Colin Shales, if you were visiting a big indoor space like a shopping centre or a hospital, how would you feel about standing in reception drawing a sphere with your smartphone around you?
Dave, I don't know. I think setting up a waypoint is, you know, setting up that thing is one thing, but having a route available that someone's already created with it would be fantastic, I think. As Callum said, it's a very initial days, but it's very encouraging results with the experience I've had with that app.
And what was that experience?
Similar to Callum, just setting up in my home and not having a chance to set up in a business or an organization or anything like that. But the results are really encouraging, I think. With that route. So, we'll go on to talking about that soon. Sure.
Tasneem Arshad, you've not played with this at this stage, but what do you make of this whole area of indoor navigation? Do you think it's still a little bit geeky, or are you eager to kind of get your hands?
Yeah, I would like to try it out at some point, I think, but very much in agreement with what's already been said, but especially the proof is going to be in the pudding, effectively, when you're in an unfamiliar environment actually and putting it through its paces. But I think it's early days yet, isn't it? But it's great that, you know, it's there to have a lot of growth and development. And obviously, hopefully, CNAI can put a lot more kind of research and feedback into it from the VI community. But I quite like the idea of having, you know, like the authorities where, you know, the police in particular, where these kind of body cams, it'd be quite cool to have like a really miniature version of that for blind and VI people. So instead of, and that being connected to your smartphone, I quite like the idea of that because that's kind of less obvious what you're doing, but you're still getting that feedback via your Bluetooth headset. So I kind of like that aspect a little bit more discreetly, as opposed to sort of waving your smartphone around and kind of, you know, everybody else observing that that's what you're doing.
That is the issue, isn't it, Callum? Some of these optical solutions, you know, we think about NaviLens, of course, where we have these sort of next generation QR codes in the environment, and that relies on your camera as well. Of course, you're a guide dog user. I use a long cane, and, you know, maybe you've got some shopping or something else to carry. You don't always have a spare hand, do you?
Yeah, I agree. And that's the other thing with it, whereas when I've been trying it out in my home, I've been holding the phone in one hand, but I've had both hands free. It's always a lot more clunky when you've got a cane in one hand and then the guide dog in one hand. Because then sometimes as a guide dog owner, you've got to do that thing sometimes where you've got to get them back on track. You might have to have the harness in one hand and sort of take the lead in the other hand and direct them. So yeah, you couldn't hold your phone out doing that. Because that's the other thing, you've got to keep it kind of straight as well and you've got to keep it central. If you drift slightly with the angle of your phone, then it could kind of throw your route off, I think. So as I keep saying, it needs to come to glasses or some sort of camera like Taz was on about. I mean, you can get these chest harnesses for your phone, can't you? A lot of runners use these where you, I think it kind of goes on your chest and you can it's like a little pouch essentially where you put your phone in. But I don't know, that feels a bit weird for me. I could use that if I was in my gym gear and going for a run, which I never do. But if you're in, for example, work and, you know, you're in your suit or you're in all your smart stuff and then got your phone strapped to your chest.
Do you want a chest harness, Colin?
No, Dave, I don't think I would. Not for a run.
Yeah, I'd feel a bit more like a kangaroo doing that.
And the thing is, you would look weird doing that sphere thing. If you were stood in a big open space trying to create a route for yourself, well, if you were stood in a public place, I guess, trying to create a route for yourself, I mean, look at how long it took me in that demo. Just wandering, a blind guy wandering around in a circle, waving his phone around. People would wonder, what the hell are you doing?
We should say this is in beta, isn't it? It's a test of feature. This is, I mean, seeing AI, Microsoft have made no secret about the fact that it is a research project. You know, they're looking to gather information about this. Given the timing, Colin Shells, obviously a lot of people concerned about the disappearance of the Soundscape app. How much should we be relying on solutions like this from some of these big companies? Wouldn't we be better off focusing more on some of the specialist tech where you know that that's not going away anytime soon?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a place for both specialist assistive technologies and free versions like this. And, you know, being that they're free, there's no harm in trying them out. Soundscape, yes, is going away. And we obviously hope that someone else will pick up that project and incorporate it into their system. But, you know, for indoor navigation, especially, you know, something that's been quite troublesome for people to navigate indoors, especially in larger organizations, there's absolutely no harm in trying this out, but with, you know, the adviso that this is an augmented experience, that you're to still use your cane or your dog, and that this kind of technology is to augment that experience when you're indoors and just to give you more confidence in navigating around a corridor or around a business or around your home.
Absolutely. Safety first. And of course, all these technologies, and RNIB has got a real active interest in this space in terms of indoor navigation. Of course, we've heard from My Eyes here on Tech Talk previously. I mentioned NaviLens. There is, of course, Good Maps Indoors. Many more. Any of you had a chance to try any of the alternatives?
Yes. Clue. Is another one that I've had a little bit of experience. It's quite a good one as well. Another free app called Clue, that's CLEW, which again is another indoor navigation app with waypoints to help you locate from point A to point B. Not something I've had a lot of experience with, but certainly one that comes up from time to time with our customers.
All righty. Well, let us know how you're getting about indoors and outdoors. We'd love to hear what tech works for you. And of course, travel safely, relying on those core mobility skills. Tasnee Marshad, Callum Stoneman and Colin Shales from our Technology for Life team. Thanks very much.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Dave is along now, catching up with Matt Brown from Living Audio.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Once in a while here on Tech Talk, we speak with a blind entrepreneur or somebody who works in the technology business. Well, our guest today is not necessarily somebody who works in the technology business, but certainly does work in the audio production and recording industry. Welcome to Matt Brown. Good to have you on RNIB Connect Radio. Matt, just sort of start, if you would, by outlining some of the services that you offer your customers.
So my business is predominantly business-to-business services. So I tend to work with other businesses or offering services to them, production services to them. And the biggest part of that work is audiobook production and editing. And then I also do voiceover recording for companies and so on. And also music production for sort of computer games and that sort of thing, which goes over to sound design as well quite a bit. Mainly I'm doing work for other businesses that need someone in to fulfill that skill set. Very rarely work with individuals these days. I used to, but I've kind of moved on to working for production companies, gaming production companies and media companies now.
Right, so if I've written a book or I've got a book that I want to get put into audio, and obviously we need to find a voice talent, an actor, somebody who can kind of perform that, you're the guy that kind of makes it happen, who sort of does the recording, presses all the buttons, makes sure the levels are right and that the person sounds all right in the recording and all that.
So if I'm working with an author who wants to self-read, then yes, that's largely correct. I would generally tend to work with the author and either remotely or in studio and help them get the very best performance possible and then do the post-production editing and mastering ready for resale as well. But I can also work with professional narrators who are not the author, but they've recorded they're going to record the book. And again, most narrators have their own studio set up now. So what will often happen is they will record the files and then send them to me for editing and mastering. And that's kind of what I do here. So years ago, you would typically find that a narrator would come to the studio and they'd sit in a little booth with padded walls and feel very claustrophobic and start to boil after an hour or so. And I would be sitting on the other side of the window and telling them to go back and read that bit again or that kind of thing. But it's sort of moved on a bit, and that was even pre-COVID as well. Most narrators had started to get their own setups at home because it's got to a point where it's affordable these days.
Right, okay. So let's talk about your setup then and your studio, because you've basically designed and built a recording studio at home, and you've obviously made all those equipment choices yourself. Just talk us through some of those choices.
Prominently, for me, the driving factor is accessibility, because many of the large production studios where I could potentially have gone and got work are using systems that are either only partially accessible or not accessible at all, to be honest. And with every studio that you go and work in, there's a learning curve, because they might be using a different mixing console to the one you're familiar with, or they have different routing for signal paths and things like that. So I decided very early on that I'd actually be better off being in control of all of that, and that would mean running my own studio or production company. And one of the things I look at is physical control as opposed to touch screens and multi-mode buttons. I'm looking for one button, one function type choices. And then as far as software is concerned, I'm looking for accessibility. So typically the software that I've got for recording and editing audiobooks and voiceovers and things is a program called Studio Recorder from American Printing House. It's an absolutely fantastically accessible two-track stereo audio editor, which has got some amazing tools and features for recording and editing audio. And then for music production, I'm using Reaper, which is a very low cost but very, very powerful digital audio workstation software. And that's both of those are running on Windows with JAWS. And I do have NVDA as well, although I'm more comfortable with JAWS as I've been using it since, well, forever, really. At some point, I'm probably going to invest in a Mac. And because Reaper can be ported over to the Mac, the user experience is pretty much the same on both systems. The only thing is that Studio Recorder, very sadly at the moment, can't be run on a Mac. There's no Mac version, and running it in an emulation mode where you kind of trick the Mac into thinking it's Windows in order to run Windows software on the Mac platform isn't very reliable. There are all kinds of glitches in the audio and things like that, but it sort of can be done, and hopefully that will improve over time. I'm working on American Printing House and trying to persuade them to do a version for Mac, because I think there's a lot of blind Mac users out there and it'd be useful.
Tell us about some of your other kit then outside of the computer. So what kind of desk have you got, and was that influenced by accessibility as well then?
Yes, I've had a number of mixing desks, and I tend to go for an analog feel but with digital multi-track capabilities built in. So the mixer I currently have is by a company called SSL, or Solid State Logic, and it's called the Big Six, and it's a multi-track USB interface built into what essentially feels like a typically analog desk. So you have your sliders, and each input channel has its own full set of controls, including EQ and compression and gain and so on and so forth. You find with digital mixers, where they're fully digital, that what you'll actually have is one set of controls. So they call it the fat channel, and that has EQ, compression, gain, panning, and so on. And then there are selector buttons, so they light up. So if you're working on channel 3, then you go and move the EQ controls, then you can press the selection button for channel 7, and the same EQ controls now are working on that channel. And that's a bit tricky if you're blind, because it's very hard to be certain about which channel you're actually working on. And that's why I like the analog style desk, and there is a number of those products around. There's Soundcraft have a 12 multi-track, that's the 12 MTK, and they have a 22, and then there's a couple of multi-track mixers from Mackie and Presonus. So there's plenty of choice out there, and it really depends on how many sort of inputs and outputs you need and various things like that.
I love going in your studio because you've always got all kinds of fun toys in there. I remember on one visit you showing me, you had a couple actually, I think jog wheels. Do you use those at all? Do you want to just explain for everyone out there in sort of R&IB Connect Radio land what a jog wheel is and why you might use it?
So if you are wanting to scroll backwards and forwards through audio and you want that sort of traditional kind of tape noise, that kind of tape speeding up or going backwards in reverse, then you can have a MIDI control surface, which is a series of buttons and knobs and sliders that you can assign to perform functions inside your digital audio workstation, like rewind, fast forward, record, and then scrub backwards and forwards. And scrubbing is that kind of sort of noise when it's going backwards, or high speed, Smurf sort of sound going forward. And that's what the jog wheel allows you to do it. It allows you to sort of spin it left and right and scroll backwards and forwards in a kind of analog reel-to-reel tape style method.
And sometimes it's easier than having to remember all these different shortcut keys, because that's the thing we as screen reader users, and particularly those of us that occasionally dabble in audio editing software, you've got to be a bit of a hotkey ninja, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Reaper is, it has a dialogue called the actions dialogue, and practically every function in Reaper can be assigned to a hotkey, and that can be any number of combinations of just letters, numbers, punctuation, and then you can add control, alt, shift to those, as well as modifiers. So there are a huge number of potential possibilities for keyboard commands. But the other thing you can do is when you want to assign a function like rewind, for example, you could go to the add new command, and you could press the letter R for rewind, or you could move a control on your control surface. And because Reaper is listening to the inputs of the computer for that, it will then recognize that you've moved a certain control or turned a certain knob or pressed a certain button, and it will then map that instead of the standard sort of QWERTY keyboard command. So that means that when you want to do rewind in future, you go and do that action, you press that button or twist that dial, and there you go. So you can set up your own mappings very easily in Reaper. It's one of the most powerful features of the software, to be honest.
And are you doing everything with the screen reader? Because we know at RNIB, for example, 93%, I think, of people registered as blind or partially sighted actually do have some usable light perception. Does that play any part for you, or are you doing everything with the screen reader now?
I am doing pretty much everything with the software. Now, I do have a tiny bit of useful vision. Not enough to read labels on buttons on the screen or tell if a track is armed or unarmed for recording, or if the software is in record mode or playback mode or whatever. But what I can do is I can see when there is a waveform on the screen, i.e. that it is recording and it's picking up my voice, or that I've hit stop and I look at the screen and I'm like, okay, yes, I can see that there is a waveform there, but I'm not hearing the playback when I play, which means that I've got a setting wrong somewhere. And I appreciate that if you're totally blind, you might not be able to see the waveform, so you don't know if there's actually audio been recorded or not, which can be require you to take some additional steps to verify that audio was indeed captured. It's just that you're not hearing it. So, you know, but there are ways to do that. So there are a lot of workarounds in Reaper that help you identify if there's audio on a track or not, if there's if the levels are correct, you know, what mode you're in, and so on and so forth.
Just finally on equipment, Matt, do you have any field recorders?
I don't at the moment, and I am actually very interested in a new line of products that have come out from a company called Zoom. And a lot of people will be familiar with Zoom recorders, and typically these are little device with some built-in microphones, or possibly have sockets for you to plug your own microphones into. And they have a card slot, so you can put a memory card in there, and you can pretty much hit record and go and record stuff out in the field. They take batteries, or they're rechargeable, or whatever. But you do have to be aware of your levels. And out in the field, you can get unexpected noises that suddenly happen. Suddenly a pneumatic drill goes off right next to you and you weren't expecting it. And that can completely mess up your recording, because you had your gain set too high, so your recording distorts and it sounds messy. Zoom have come out with these new recorders that use a recording technology called 32-bit float point. And the beauty of this is that you don't have to worry about levels anymore. You can literally hit record, and the way that the file is written to the memory card is done in such a way that the levels don't matter. Because you can take that file into your software at the computer, and you can lower the gain on very loud sounds without affecting the quality of the audio, or raise the gain on very quiet sounds without affecting the quality of the audio. And so it literally doesn't matter about what you picked up in the field. You can be pretty sure that you've got a workable file without having to worry about watching level meters and so on. So it's a very powerful technology. And some people think that it's cheating, because a good sound recordist will be aware of levels and they'll set all their gains correctly before they hit the record button. But for blind people, 32-bit Float Point offers a really sort of fail-safe and foolproof way of getting a good level in the field without any effort at all.
Now, running your own business, obviously there's a bit of admin goes on there as well. Invoices, purchase orders, accounting, tax returns, all that stuff. Have you had to make any specific choices there in terms of accessibility?
I'm afraid you're going to be disappointed in this part of my interview, because a lot of what we do is working through platforms that already provide the contractual side and the administrative side of working. So for example, with audiobooks, we tend to do a lot of our work through acx.com or through Find Away Voices. And these platforms essentially allow the author of an audiobook to place a project on the site, and then a narrator or audio producer to come along and accept that contract. And then the company behind that platform handle all the payouts and the contracts and sales reports and so on and so forth. So there's no need for invoicing and, you know, dealing with payments into bank accounts on that side of it. On the occasions when I do work for companies where they want to send, you know, they want to send payments to me, and because that doesn't happen that often, I just have a template that's been put together for me in Microsoft Word, and that allows me to go in, change the details of who I'm invoicing and how much it's for and what the services are. And then I literally render that to a PDF and send it by email to the company in question, and then they pay me into the bank account. So it's a very simple system that I have, and I use Microsoft Office tools like Excel for spreadsheets and things for handling accounts and stuff like that. And I use Microsoft Word and its PDF tool for creating invoices. So it's a very basic, simple system. You can, of course, get involved with Sage and QuickBooks and all of these tools if you're running the kind of service where you need to do a lot of invoicing and you've got employees that need to give you receipts and expense accounts and that kind of stuff. But that isn't me. So I'm aware of that stuff, but it's not something I use on a day-to-day basis.
Sure. So you found those platforms to be pretty accessible. You haven't hit any accessibility challenges on the business side?
No, not really. I mean, Excel is very usable. Microsoft Word is pretty usable. Outlook is pretty usable. I think if I was going to start messing around with things like PowerPoint for presentations and things, then I might start to find some more technical difficulties, because PowerPoint by its very nature is quite a visual system where you're putting together a visual presentation, perhaps with some multimedia, so some audio, some video, some pictures, charts and things like that. And I can see that you would need, I think, more training on getting the most out of PowerPoint as a blind user. And probably a good use of something like Access to Work would be to have somebody to help you check over your presentation and help you with any visual aspects of it to make it look, you know, flashy and cool.
Yeah, because Access to Work is available for people who are self-employed or someone running your own business. You don't have to work for somebody else to benefit from Access to Work.
No, you don't. And one of the things that I'm very pleased to see is that they have removed the requirement of minimum number of hours, because you used to have to work 15 hours or more in your field in order to actually get Access to Work at all. They now have no minimum requirement, and indeed you can even get Access to Work for voluntary work now. So that enables you to ramp up very slowly. And in fact, what I think for visually impaired people entering into the workplace, whether that's through employment or self-employment, is that we need to ramp into it gently. Because going in at 36 hours a week when you've never done it before, and, you know, finding you've got to do the job and focus on all of the accessibility issues and so on and so forth, I think that that's very, very overwhelming for a lot of people. So what I like about the changes to the access to work rules is that you can, if you're, especially if you're self-employed, you can start out 2 or 3, 4 hours a week, start finding your feet. And as you get more comfortable with the job and you find working practices and methodologies that help you with your work and shortcuts and little tricks to help you as a blind person get around some of the problems there might be with visual aspects to your work, you can get more comfortable and gradually build up the number of hours so that after you've been doing it for a year or a couple of years, you're sort of doing full time, because you've got more comfortable with everything and you're given the space to grow in your own confidence. And that the change to access to work has empowered that, and I think that's very, very welcome change, to be honest.
You might have just partially answered this, but what advice would you give to somebody listening to this, a blind or partially sighted person who thinks that they might like to explore the recording industry, perhaps get involved in voiceover or audio production? What advice would you offer? Should they go on a course? Is there any equipment that you could sort of start off with that, you know, is not going to break the bank? What tips would you offer someone at the beginning of their journey, Matt?
I think I would say that a good place to start in order to learn about the particular aspects of the industry that you want to look at and possibly work in would be to hit YouTube. Because there are any number of videos out there, tutorials and explainers and, you know, how-tos, which will give you a good general feel. Even if it's from somebody sighted, you know, who's using a mouse to click around the screen at 100 miles an hour, it doesn't matter, because if you're using software like Reaper Studio Recorder that we talked about earlier, there are ways to tackle all of these issues. It might be slightly slower and you might have more keyboard commands to learn, but you can pretty much do the same job as somebody with full vision. And there are plugins that you can use to help you deal with, EQ and removing breathing from recordings where there's excessive breathing in there, reverb, room reverb you can cut out, all sorts of things. So there's lots of automated processes and things that can help you. But definitely start with YouTube, looking at some of the tutorials and so on. And then in terms of equipment, a lot of people who want to do voiceover work, the first thing they'll do is they'll go, oh, I'll go and buy a USB microphone. And there are a couple of high-end USB microphones that would be considered professional level, just about. But by and large, you'll find that ultimately you're going to end up with a separate microphone and audio interface. And so I would suggest that, for example, Audient are doing a range of audio interfaces now, which are the Evo range, and they now have accessible software control panels. So you can change your levels, change your monitoring levels, so what you hear in your headphones, and change what's going out through your microphone into the recording software and so on. And you can save your setups as well, which means that you can have different setups for different applications. You might have one setup for recording YouTube videos. You might have another setup for recording a voiceover and so on. And these can be saved and recalled. And we now have access to that control panel. We didn't about a year ago, but we do now. And they're very, very good prices. They're quite easy to use and they sound amazing. They have a really quiet noise floor within themselves. That's the noise they generate just by being plugged in and powered on. And you can get some pretty loud sounds recorded without clipping as well. So I would say that the Evo products are really good as a starter product, especially because that all-important software control panel is now accessible.
Brilliant. Okay, Matt, thank you so much. You've been an absolute mine of information. And if folk want to find out a little bit more about your business, Living Audio, how can we do that?
This is one side of the business, actually, that I should have talked about and didn't, and that's website development. It's something that's... I do have a website. It's really not very good. Websites have to look good. They have to catch people's eye. And they have to look professional, whether that's complex and graphics heavy or whether it's simple and very minimalist, like the kind of Apple approach. And it's something that you unfortunately either have to know somebody who can do that for you or you have to pay someone. And neither of those situations apply to me. So I do have a website, but I would say the best thing to do is just send an email to inquiries@livingaudio.co.uk if you want to ask any questions, and I'll try my best to get back to you. I can't respond to everything, but if it's something I can help with, obviously I will do so.
Matt from Living Audio, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for your company. We really appreciate it. And we also appreciate the contribution of our guests and co-hosts, Callum Stoneman and Tasneem Arshad. Cheers, guys.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Thank you. And see you soon.
And from myself, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, do stay in touch. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. Until next time, bye for now.